Welcome to the Big Three podcast. This podcast answers three big questions raised from Sunday's sermon by the congregation of Guymere Baptist. The Big Three Pod seeks to discuss these questions, explore issues, unpack theology, provide further information and explanation to help your faith grow. You can listen to the original sermon on your favourite podcast platform or at guymerebaptist.org.au. Our prayer is that this pod helps you as you follow Jesus.
Well, welcome back to The Big Three. It's great to have you joining me. My name is Mark Rader. I'm the senior pastor at Guymere Baptist Church. And for the next half hour or so, your host of The Big Three, as we do indeed seek to unpack three big questions that came out of Sunday's sermon. Last Sunday, we continued our very brief return to our theme, Our Extraordinary Life Together, which was particularly appropriate given that we also talked about the changing of the church calendar from the single Sunday of Pentecost into what is known as ordinary time. It's the period of time, the longest period of time in the church calendar, where the church focuses on the work and ministry of Jesus, his teaching ministry, his healing ministry, and the focus for Christians is on their discipleship, which seems like a great place for us to kind of pause and stop and reflect as we kind of hit this point in the year. And so I turn to Luke chapter 5, the first 11 verses, where Jesus calls his first disciples. After the miracle in the boat, the miracle of the fish that Peter and his companions kind of pull up after Jesus urges them to kind of go out to deep water and try again after a fruitless night fishing. An opportunity then to be reminded of the importance of where Jesus calls us. And I spent a bunch of time focusing on the fact that Peter was at work when Jesus encountered him, and that Jesus's work was happening in Peter's work, like in the work itself of the boat and the cleaning of the net, and that he was revealed in a very work-based, vocation-based miracle. It wasn't a healing. It wasn't, the calming of the storm. It was a whole bunch of fish for a fisherman, and that Jesus even calls Peter and his companions to follow him in the idiom of their vocation, right? To be fishers of people. Just talked a little bit about how important it is to remember that we are called to follow Jesus wherever we are sent, wherever we find ourselves, right? Wherever we are. It's not a calling that exists out there for somebody else in a particular field. It's something that exists for all of us. A really good reminder of an earlier series that we looked at this year, which was the Good Job series about faith and vocation. So it was nice to return to that as well. But we've got some questions to work through today. And the first is that you said the miracle revealed something about Jesus. What was revealed? So I did talk a bit about the miracle of the fish and that there was something about that very vocational miracle that spoke pretty clearly to Peter. But what was revealed in that? Because it's quite a different kind of miracle. The second question is this. We follow Jesus wherever we are. How else can we see Jesus revealed in our vocation? Part of what I was speaking about in terms of application was the reminder that it is actually in the work itself. It's in our work that we find Jesus revealed, that we find Jesus at work, and we are invited to participate. And that goes beyond the work of evangelism, unless your job is evangelism. Most vocations, you don't necessarily have evangelistic conversations on your PD. And so those conversations, which we want to take and we want to have whenever we have the opportunity, tend to take place kind of between jobs, at lunch, when there's a bit of a break after lunch or after work or whatever the case might be. And so we want to kind of be reminded of where we see Jesus in the work, which is a really good question to return to. And then finally, how do you know when you should leave the nets and consider a call to vocational ministry? I emphasize this a little bit more in the morning than I did in the evening. Peter leaves the nets and goes into what we could, I suppose, call vocational ministry. He doesn't go to seminary, so-called, but he does follow Jesus around quite literally for 3 years. And then the next thing that he really finds himself doing in terms of vocation is being one of the leaders of the church, all right, and engaged in all the ministry and mission that Jesus has called them into. That doesn't happen for all of us. But I did mention that for some of us, we may have that kind of sense that God might be calling us to leave our boats, to leave our nets, and to head out in something else. And so what does that look like and what does that feel like? Which is a great question. Looking forward to answering that a little bit as well. So those are our three questions, an opportunity for us to dig deeper, to continue the conversation as we consider what it means to follow Jesus in ordinary time. And by following Jesus in ordinary time, it makes it fairly extraordinary for us. So the story itself revolves around the miracle of the fish. It's interesting to me that the heading, at least in the NIV, is that Jesus calls his first disciples. So the miracle doesn't even kind of get airplay from the perspective of the main part of the story, right? But Jesus teaches. There's a fair crowd outside of Capernaum. And so Jesus gets into the boat in order to be heard by the crowd, puts out a little ways. It's Simon's boat. And after he finishes teaching, he says to Peter, put out into deeper water and cast the nets down. I think Peter was probably humoring Jesus when he said, okay. But when he does, when he lowers the nets, they're filled to overflowing and they begin to break. They call the other boat out. They end up with so many fish that both boats begin to sink. And it's at that point that Peter falls at Jesus's knees and basically says, depart from me, Lord, for I'm a sinful man. The miracle obviously plays a significant role in Simon's decision to follow Jesus. Likewise, in the decision of James and John, who also come with him, because we're told that they were all astonished by the catch of fish. And the question then is, if the miracle reveals something about Jesus, what was revealed? Right, there are certain miracles that Jesus performs in the Gospels where I think we would more clearly see the connection between what it reveals about Jesus and the miracle. So, when Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, it demonstrates his power over life and death. When he heals the leper, or when he heals those who are blind, it reveals that he is a fulfillment of the prophecies that proclaimed that the time would come when the blind would see and the lepers would be cleansed. Like, there's a sense that he's doing the very work of God. When he heals the paralytic, who is lowered down through the roof, it demonstrates his authority not just to heal and straighten and strengthen limbs, but also his authority to forgive sins, because that's the discussion that gets played out there. When he casts out demons, it demonstrates his power over Satan and his kingdom. But what does an extraordinary large catch of fish reveal about Jesus? And I think that... there's a little bit about the character of Jesus, right? Like the fact that he has that kind of authority and, shall I say, control, right? That he can know where the school of fish was going to be, that he was able to somehow, in cooperation with the Father, bring a school of fish to the shore or where they were, whatever the case might be. It demonstrates something of his power. But I think, and I didn't draw this out to a great degree in the message, but I think what it reveals to Peter is that Jesus is involved in every area of life, that his authority runs to every area of life, that there is no... there's no part of life, there's no slice of what we do that is outside of the realm of his power and of his authority. Because it's a miracle in Peter's vocation, right? Like that's what really struck me as I was reading it. To a fisherman, the miracle that Jesus performs is all about fish, and it's just a lot of fish. As I said in the sermon, I'm sure Peter and his companions had good nights before. Like, I'm pretty sure they'd come in with a big catch of fish where they'd had an extraordinary night together. Now, I don't know if they had ever filled both boats to the point of sinking, right? So they're astonished, right? They're astonished at the amount of fish, but it's just a lot of fish. But it struck me how significant that is because of its ordinariness, right? It's an example of that extraordinary component. It's an ordinary miracle in some regards, in the sense that it is a vocational miracle about a lot of fish for a fisherman. And it's extraordinary because, well, there's an extra amount of fish. And so I think that that's ultimately what it reveals. Like, it reveals Jesus's power. It reveals Jesus's authority. You might even say his knowledge or his wisdom, right? He seems to know fishing better than Peter. And yet it reveals that that authority, that power, that wisdom, that knowledge is not just for spiritual things. It's not just for, you know, unpacking the old, what we would call the Old Testament, right? It's not just teaching about the kingdom of God. It's not just the big healing miracles. It extends to every corner of every life. And I think that revelation is quite striking. And I think it's in that context then that Peter is willing to respond to the call. It's not a big three question because I haven't stated it as such, but one of the questions I think that's often come out of, the call of the disciples is, why did the disciples leave? Like, in the other gospel accounts, Jesus finds them and just basically says, come follow me. And they drop everything and follow him. At least here, there's the miracle to kind of sort of explain it. But I do wonder if part of the reason why Peter and James and John were willing to follow Jesus is because this miracle demonstrates that their lives, that their vocation, right, that their work was not outside of the scope of the kingdom, right? That Jesus wasn't just looking for the intellectuals. He wasn't just looking for those who knew the Hebrew scriptures inside and out. He wasn't just looking for the super righteous. He wasn't just looking for those people who were intensely spiritual in some sort of contemplative way or any other way, really. He was looking for people who were willing to follow him in any place, in any space, in any vocation, and that they saw in what Jesus revealed about himself their way to respond and to step into that call. So I think that's ultimately what was revealed. The power and authority of Jesus that extends to every single area of every single life, that there is no place where Jesus is not king. There is no place where his authority and where his work is not taking place, because Jesus was teaching out of the boat. And I think if we can remember and recall that in our own lives, it will help us to, it'll help us to find our sense of call and our sense of purpose in the things that we engage in with intent and purpose. Where I ended up in that first question kind of leads nicely into the second one. It's like I planned this or something. And it says, we follow Jesus wherever we are, but how else can we see Jesus revealed in our vocation? I don't hear very many stories of the kind of miracle that Peter and his companions experienced, but there are probably some out there. But I think it's a great question to remind us of the sorts of things that we're looking for, right? I mentioned at the outset, and we talked about it in our series on work and or vocation and faith earlier in the year, that our work is not made good or our work is not integrated with our faith if we have evangelistic conversations, which can sometimes be the default. I think we sort of assume that the only way that my work, if I'm working in a factory or I'm working for a company that's just interested in making money, or I'm working in a school, or I'm working in admin, or I'm my vocation is wrapped up with caring for family, whether it be children who are young or parents who are elderly or kind of anything in between, we kind of think to ourselves that, the only thing that makes that work good is the opportunities I have to talk about my faith. Right? When I can talk about Jesus, when I can say on Monday that I went to church on Sunday and see what happens, when I have the opportunity to pray with somebody. And I want to be kind of careful in this space because obviously we want to be on the lookout for those kinds of conversations, right? Those kinds of opportunities. And we want to take them when the opportunities do arise. But ultimately, I think we are called to remember that it's actually in the work itself. The work that you are paid to do sometimes, and the work that you do because it's really important, right? Whether you're paid or not. It's in that work that you are partnering with what Jesus is doing. And so there were a couple of things that I mentioned on Sunday that came out of our series earlier in the year. But it's ultimately remembering the purpose that God gave to humanity in the garden, right? Prior to sin, right? So that work, when it was given to humanity, when vocation was given to humanity, it was unaffected by sin. And so work, vocation, is not given to us as a punishment for sin. It's not a consequence of sin. Our work or our vocation is frustrating. It doesn't lead to the same sense of contentment. It can be, you know, pointless and in vain, right? And yet it's still a good gift from God. And so whenever we are, you know, as the first people were called to do, when we bring order out of chaos, whether that be cleaning up a room, whether it's for the 100th time or the first time, when we bring order out of chaos from a series of receipts that we have to make sure kind of all makes sense so that a tax return can be filed. When we bring order out of chaos in the sense of, in anything, we organize a storeroom or whatnot. That's the good work of God that we have been called to. I think whenever we, are doing things that bless other people, right? And that can take any number of forms, right? There are mornings, I think we'd all agree, when someone's serving a meal in a cafe, you know, a cup of coffee and a, you know, plate of eggs and bacon or whatever the case might be, that's a blessing. It facilitates the conversation with my friend or whoever I'm speaking with and just kind of starts the day off well. That's a blessing. And so there's the work in hospitality or in service where we are benefiting and blessing other people, whether we're paid for it or not. Right. I think that there are, ways when we, I think for people who are in education, I mean, there's a really clear, I think, connection or anything educational where we are seeking to help people make sense of God's world, where we're seeking to help people organize their knowledge or learn how to learn so that they can be successful, which is ultimately about wisdom. And we hope that that will kind of lead into them understanding more about God's world. I think for anyone in health services, physiotherapy or occupational therapy or speech pathology or doctors and nurses or kind of anything in that field, I mean, you are assisting people in being restored to health. I mean, that has to be the work of God, right? We see Jesus doing it all the time. So I think what we want to be looking for are those places where we are blessing or being of benefit to people around us, where the things that we are doing, and sometimes, if we're working, say, in a factory where, we feel like we're just dealing with a couple of parts and we're not sure what the ultimate outcome is, you need to recognize, maybe what we're contributing to. For a while I worked in a factory that made car parts, and now I wasn't thinking about how my work and my work at that time connected with the kingdom of God, but looking back on it, cars are a real blessing to people, right? They're, not perfect, but they allow people to travel to work, and they allow people to travel to school, and they allow people to travel to see family. They increase the range in which we can move and work. They are a blessing. And so I was contributing in some very small way in the spring manufacturing company I worked at for a while to that wider goal and purpose. So I think we need to be kind of considering those things, because what it does then is it kind of sanctifies, right? It makes holy the everyday things that we're doing, right? And then, of course, we want to be kind and honest and gentle and forgiving and kind of bring the character of Christ to our work as well, which I think is important. And then hopefully there may be an opportunity over morning tea or at lunchtime or when we're traveling on the train with a colleague where we actually get to talk about faith and talk about Jesus. But ultimately, our work is still good, right? And we're participating in the work of God in the very work itself. So I think it's that stuff that's so critical for us to grapple with, to recognize in our work where we are bringing a blessing, where we're bringing order, where we are expanding the reign and rule of God, where we have the opportunity to bring the character of Christ, you know, serving others and loving others and being patient and all that sort of stuff. But even then in the work itself, right, where we're bringing healing and restoration, where there is some level of renewal, where there's something that improves for people because of our work and our vocation. And I think that's a really critical piece. Again, whether that's paid or unpaid, domestic work, volunteer capacities, whatever it is, I think we need to be really, really reminded of Jesus's call to participate with his work where it is. I was really struck by the fact that Peter and his companions were not in the crowd listening to Jesus talk. They were working. And yet Jesus is doing his work right next to them and then incorporates some of their workspace in order to be doing his work. We're not told whether he healed anybody. We're not told the topic that he was speaking on, but he was nonetheless doing his work in that space as Peter and his companions were like fixing the nets. They were just doing their work. They were doing their job. They were engaged in their vocation. I think that's really striking for us. And a helpful reminder, I think, for all of us about the roles that we have in our day-to-day vocations, those things we do with intent and purpose. So one of the things that I drew attention to on Sunday is that, you know, I can talk about Luke chapter 5, 1 to 11 being an invitation for us all to consider how Jesus's authority and his control and his power and his work extends to everything that we do, every area of our lives. And I can talk about how important it is to recognize how our vocations are part of God's good work, and to identify those components of our work that is good, right? There's a place for us to recognize the brokenness and the need for renewal as well, but just to focus on the good for the moment. And yet, the tricky part with that passage, of course, is at the end, Peter stops being a fisherman, right? So it's a bit of a tension point. He gets up, leaves his net, leaves his boat, and really, apart from a couple of instances when, you know, he returns to fishing kind of because he's at a bit of a loose end, the rest of his life is taken up with what we might call vocational ministry, right? Where he's engaged in church work. And I did mention, particularly on Sunday morning, that I think for the majority of us, we need to recognize Jesus's call, his invitation to us in our day-to-day activities, in the vocations that we find ourselves in at the moment and as things change in our lives. But I also acknowledge that for some people, and there might be a few of you out there listening, you have been grappling with the niggling sense that God may be calling you to leave your vocation, the current thing that you are doing, and enter into some kind of vocational ministry space, whether that be, work in a church or in a parachurch organization, whether that be pastoral ministry or some other aspect of ministry, that there might just be something that God's calling you to. That would require you to retool and head in a very, very different direction. And the question is, how do you know when you should leave the nets and consider that call to vocational ministry? And I want to kind of broaden it out to, I guess, any time that we feel called to leave one role, one vocational space, and to head into something completely different, particularly in those instances where we feel there may be a need to retool, where we may need to return to study, for instance, or we may have to kind of almost start back at the bottom, you know, start back at the beginning in terms of a new vocation, whatever that might be. And I'm not sure that there is one specific answer to this. For those of you who are beginning to grapple with that or have been grappling with that, perhaps you've spoken with friends, spoken with colleagues, spoken with others who have made that kind of a change or have been in that kind of vocational space. I can reflect a little bit on my own experience. I had a real sense that God was calling me into youth ministry at the time, or a very clear suggestion. I didn't have clarity that was exactly what I needed to be doing, but it there were a few things that happened where I was like, I'm pretty sure this is what I need to be exploring. And so one of the things that I did, I had some people who were praying for and with me in that space, which was helpful. But I ended up calling a handful of pastors in the area and speaking to them, a few people that I knew, and just kind of said, essentially asked them, how'd you get into ministry? Like, what was the process? Because it felt like the process that I had gone through, which was, heading in one direction. I wanted to be a teacher at the time. And then really just feeling like God hijacked that and sent me in a different direction. I wanted to find out whether that was even remotely legitimate. And the stories that I heard were, pretty random. There were a whole bunch of different reasons why people went into ministry. And I kind of came out of it thinking to myself, well, the path that I'm on may not be the same path that others have been on, but it doesn't appear to be a path, right? God calls people in a variety of ways, and this seems as legitimate as any other. And so I just kind of proceeded, which is kind of the second thing, shall I say, that I did, which was basically to kind of go through the open doors, head in a particular direction and try some doors as well and see what happened. I was under the belief, I still am, that, while God can steer you standing still, it's always easier to steer a moving vehicle, right? And so there was a real sense that I just needed to start moving in direction. And if I'd got it completely wrong, then God would be able to more easily steer me, right? And so I began to head in the direction of vocational ministry, began to make some decisions towards that end. And as doors continued to open and opportunities arose, I just continued to kind of walk through those and step into those, which was a really helpful thing. So I think those are valuable ways for us to assess what God may be calling us to. I reckon that it's worth when I was younger and making these sorts of decisions, I didn't feel an urgency to do those things. At one level, it was kind of the only thing on my horizon, right? I was going to be a teacher, and then that door really closed and I didn't really have anything else. And so when there was this sense of God calling me potentially into another area, it was kind of easy to head into. In my conversations with people over the years, who have felt that call of God, I recognize that there are some wider concerns. They're often around things like finances, right? If you've stepped into a vocational space, for instance, right? Particularly for people, who have a mortgage now and may also have a family, young kids, and, you've been in a vocation for 10 years or something, and you've kind of not made it, but you've made it, right? You're able to support and care for your family, and there's some satisfaction and contentment in your role. The decision to step out of that, to try to find the financial support to be able to study or to do something different, can be really worrisome. And I think the examples that I've seen of people who have made those decisions have been, again, as varied as anything else. Some people have, taken a step of faith and just jumped into it. Maybe their spouse has returned to work and they've gone to study and at the same time have taken up some more of the care of the family to kind of make that work. Sometimes they've chipped away at something part-time for a while. Sometimes they've given up a day a week and stepped into a vocational space to kind of to begin to explore that a little bit. Any number of ways kind of work. Again, I don't think there's one particular way. I think the most critical things when it comes to leaving the nets, when we have a sense that God might be calling us to something like that, is that we need to do something. We need to do something. I don't think any of us want to live with a sense of regret. Now, God can use us anywhere that we are, right? Whether we remain in our field or not, God can still use us, as we talked about in the other question, right? We're always engaged in the work of God. But if we have a sense that God's calling us into something different, if he's calling us to step out, if he's calling us to leave the nets and the boat and to follow him in a different space, in a different way, the important thing is to do something. Don't just sit on it. That something might be initially to get some people to be praying with and for you. It might be to do what I did and talk to a bunch of pastors and or the, in the field that you're thinking about and just kind of talk that through and do some research around it. It may mean taking, you know, a particular step. I've known people who took a first step, which was, I wouldn't say unduly cautious, but have taken a cautious step forward to kind of test the waters to see how something might work, and then have taken a bigger step and a bigger step and then a bigger step into something new. But whatever we do, we need to be doing something. We want to be responding to the call of God, so that we're not ignoring that call. We're not ignoring that voice. So I hope that some of that's helpful. I mean, I hope there's some freedom in the sense that there's no one way to respond. While that can be a little bit daunting as well, because sometimes it's nice to think that there's a clear path, right? You follow steps 1, 2, 3, and then you'll know the answer. Most of the time, as following Jesus seems to be a little bit more, you know, just do something, just step out and see what happens. But there are any number of ways to do that. But I think the important thing is to do that, right? To step out and to begin to follow where you believe Jesus might be leading you, and see what happens. And sometimes, of course, you know, I should probably kind of close with this. Sometimes there is a bit of a, you know, the miracle of the fish where we're like, okay, this is all really clear and I just need to get at it. And if that's the case, well, just get at it, because we want to be people who are faithfully following where Jesus might lead us. And in particular, as we enter into the church calendar time of ordinary time, a time to be focused on what it means to follow Jesus, to be thinking about his teachings, about his call, as we consider this next period of the church calendar. Again, a reminder that the church calendar is not just some kind of vestige from the past, but it's a reminder that our lives ultimately revolve not around financial quarters, or school terms, or semesters, or trimesters, or even the seasons. Our lives revolve around the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And we're in that period of time when we're reflecting on his life, on his ministry, on the things that he taught, and what he called his followers to do, which is a great focus for us as always. Next week, we're beginning a series that we've called Learning to Pray with Jesus. And we're going to be looking at the example of Jesus and his prayer in the Gospel of Luke. As I mentioned on Sunday, Luke has kind of become our gospel for the year. You know, 2024 is brought to you by the Gospel of Luke. And we're going to be diving into what Luke has to say and the example that we have of Jesus and his teaching. I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into that and considering what it means for us as a community of faith. So hope to see you on Sunday, either on site or online. Thank you once again for joining me on The Big Three. It's been a real pleasure, again, to continue the conversation. Hope that it's been helpful for you as you consider what it means to love and follow Jesus, and hope to have you join me again next week. And until then, God bless.
Thanks for joining us at the GBC Big Three podcast. We trust you found this inspiring, encouraging, challenging, but ultimately helpful to enable you to follow Jesus. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can also listen to the We Are The Church podcast, a discussion pod with real stories from real people at Guymere Baptist as they share their experiences of faith and discipleship in action. If you've enjoyed this pod, why don't you rate and review it? This way others can discover the podcast too.